Welcome to the podcast, Coping Kit for Everyday Life. I'm Rochelle Porter, and I'm here with my friend and dear colleague, Genevieve Lowry.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to our podcast. We're super excited to get this started. And Rochelle, I'm so excited to be doing this with you. We did spend a lot of time thinking about what to call our podcast. We wanted something that would speak to our child life people, but also something that connected to the larger community.
Yes, and that's where we came up with Coping Kit for Everyday Life. These days, we can really use a bag of tools to really help us deal with the both ordinary and extraordinary things that happen in our lives. We are hoping that our podcast is going to want you to want to share with us and learn more about how you can create your own coping kit by us sharing with you all the different conversations that Genevieve and I have had over the years, and really talking about how we use our child life skills to support children and families, ourselves, and each other.
What we hope comes through in our podcast is our open and honest friendship, where we challenge each other, but also our love of child life work, supporting children and families, and not just life-altering challenges, but the challenges of everyday life.
So thank you again for checking out our podcast, Coping Kit for Everyday Life. We're hoping that you'll like it enough to come back, because we're going to have lots of great things to share with you and learn together on how you can create your own coping kit to support yourself and your loved ones. Welcome, everyone, to our podcast, Coping Kit for Everyday Life. My name is Rochelle Porter, and I'm here with my friend and dear colleague, Genevieve Lowry. And we're excited. This is our first podcast. So, Genevieve, we've been talking about this for a while. And, you know, for us, the funny thing was coming up with the name. So we came up with Coping Kit for Everyday Life because we are child life specialists. And one of the things we do is help our families create a bag of tools of things that can help them through their medical journey. So we thought, why not have a podcast where we can talk with people just like you in this community of how to create your own coping kit for your own everyday life. So Genevieve, you know, I think first we really want to share with people who we are, like what brought us together. So first, I want to share a little bit about myself. So as I mentioned already, I'm a child life specialist. Some people may be familiar, so I'm hoping my child life community is going to join us on this podcast, but there are going to be some people who are going to join this podcast and not really know what child life is. So as a child life specialist, I like to say is my training is in child development and really helping to understand how to help children and families through traumatic experiences and really helping them cope through those. In this case, I spent my entire career working in healthcare and really working with families, children with all types of diagnosis. I spent a lot of time working with kids who had cancer, but all different types of diagnosis and really just helping them navigate the medical experience, helping children understand in a age appropriate and developmentally appropriate way about their illness. But most importantly, what are things to help them through some of the most terrifying, scary experiences? But also, I have to say, also to be a part of that journey and celebration, because not always does it end in a very sad situation. A lot of our patients will come to us, get healed, go on. I've been in this profession for quite a long time. And, you know, I've watched little kids who are now adults and have, you know, their own children. So hence, I've been in here a while. So, you know, we're going to continue to share a little bit about our journey. So Genevieve, I wanted you to share a little bit about your journey, and then we'll talk about like what brought us here. So what would you like to share with everyone about you?
First, I'd like to say that I am so super excited to be here with you, Rochelle. We have really been on our child life journey, I would say side by side, almost from the beginning. I mean, I started at the hospital a few years before you did, but we worked on units that were connected to each other. So we often shared patients together. I moved into an outpatient clinic area and they opened up a second position. I practically begged you to join me there.
Really good.
I did, because I couldn't imagine working that closely with anyone else. In the beginning, I remember we also had this beautiful office that was so big that would fit so many people and all of our child life shit. Like, as any child life specialist will know, most offices feel like they're all going to topple down on top of them. And then we were moved into this teeny tiny office. And in some ways that literally just brought us closer, not just physically, but psychologically and emotionally as well, as we really had to hunker down and move all that stuff from that nice big space into this tiny, tiny little space. But literally did feel like stuff was going to come crashing down on our heads at any given moment. So I've been a child life specialist like you for like a gajillion years. And I've worked with a variety of illnesses and a variety of families and patients. And I now am in academia. I work at Bank Street College and I work in the child life program there and the master's program there. Shout out. But I also have had a private practice. I've really tried to think about, and I think that's really applicable to our idea for this podcast, is this idea of child life specialists working in non-traditional settings. And when I define non-traditional settings, I think of them as things that aren't medical related, because to me, that's a standard of care. Child life specialists should be in hospice. We should be in palliative care. We should be children of adult patients in those settings. And I like to think of child life specialists working in a variety of other places and where children experience different kinds of trauma. And I think that's where we can really reach a broader community through this podcast, is really thinking about our child life skills and how they apply to all kinds of settings and environments and experiences and all different kinds of families. So I have to say, I'm just super excited. I think we're going to have a lot of fun doing this together. We haven't sat side by side in years. We still have continued our connection and our relationship and our friendship. And so I'm so excited that we get to come together on this podcast with one another. So why don't we start off with, you know, what brought you to child life? This is the story that all child life specialists love to tell, is how did they find them in this field, in this profession that can be a little bit obscure and kind of hard to come to? How did you find yourself here?
Well, I often say child life found me. I actually did not know about child life at all. I knew very early on that I wanted to work with sick children. Knew that probably at the age of 10, 12. And I said, okay, well, if you want to work with kids in the hospital, you got to become a doctor. So I decided, okay, I'll go to school and I'll become a doctor. So got to Utica College. So I'm a Utica College graduate and pre-med minor, and said, hey, you know what? I don't want to major in the sciences. So my advisor at the time said, okay, there's this thing called child life and there's this thing called OT. Maybe one of those two you'd be interested in. So I went to an advisor for child life and she told me about it. I said, oh, this would be really great. I think this would make me a really good doctor. I'd really learn how to work with kids psychosocially, learn about the emotional aspects and how to, you know, help them understand things. This would be great. So I'll do this and then I'll, you know, become a doctor. So then I took organic chemistry and that's when I said, okay, I'm going to have to change my career path because organic chemistry didn't go so well. So you out there who know what I'm talking about, said, okay, this may be where you change your career path.
I hear that.
And so I said, okay, journey on. And it was totally fine because once I got into the hospital, did my internship and went on to become a child life specialist, I saw the training and what doctors do, which I totally respect, totally not me. So again, this definitely was made for me. And I feel like as I started to work with kids and I started to work with patients and families, I was like, yes, this is my jam. This is me. I love this. I love being able to be with families, be with kids, because I love working with children, you know, just really helping them find their own way. And, you know, not necessarily me creating, because I think sometimes people feel like, you know, as a child life specialist, like I'm here to create this change for this family. In fact, I really believe we're just there to kind of support and help them figure out, you know, what their journey is. So, and that, which goes in line with what we talk about, a coping kit, is really each person, each family, you probably say the same thing you work with, something different works for each family. Mm-hmm. And they come to us with a whole life already. And all we're doing is really just kind of sitting down with them and saying, okay, what's some things that worked for you in the past? Mm-hmm. And how can we then connect that to this experience? So one of the things I didn't say to you guys is that child life specialist, many years, also a social worker, licensed social worker, and now recently a life coach. So again, I think, you know, again, like how Genevieve said, like child life work in the path that you take could be so different for everyone. So again, we'll be able to kind of share with you guys like different skills and different tools that we've used that we, I know, will be helpful for all of us in this new community that we're creating.
Yeah.
So tell me, what brought you to child life? How did it find you, or did you find it? Let's hear your story.
It's a very similar story, only a different original career path. You know, I knew I wanted to work with children, and I thought the only two things you could be working with children was a teacher or a nurse. My mother was a nurse. I'm not particularly good at math. And so to me, nursing seemed like a math kind of thing that you needed to be good at. I don't know where that comes from. So I decided to go into education. I went to Wheelock, shout out to Wheelock. And I started out in their early childhood education program, which literally puts you in a classroom like the first week that you're there or something. And I was in shock because I was like, oh my God, I cannot do this. It was like 30 children, one adult. I guess what I really realized was that I just didn't want to know one aspect of children in a way, that I wanted to know the whole family. And I don't know that I made that connection or that realization at that point, but I did go and talk to my advisor. My advisor at the time was Dick Thompson. So if you're listening, Dick, woo for you. And who is the author of our Child Life Bible, the handbook. And he said to me, go do some volunteer work and see if you like this other field. Because at the time, we like only offered two majors. It was child life or education. And so I was like, oh, crap, what do I do? Because I really loved being in Boston. I loved my friends. I loved my roommate. I didn't want to transfer someplace else.
Reality, yes.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to go someplace else. I liked where I was. It was a small college. It was perfect for me. But I volunteered at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, and I walked into that setting, and it was like, oh, like things just opened up for me. I was like, this is where I belong. I like science. I like the medicine. I do not want to be responsible for it, right? Like, I like taking really big ideas and breaking them down into manageable chunks for children and families. And I like the creative aspect of being able to figure out, ooh, how can I explain that diagnosis in a way, you know, with using, you know, rubber stamps and, you know, glue sticks and popsicle sticks, you know, like, how do I put this together for a kid so that it makes sense to them and in their life? I also really love, Rochelle, that you brought up this idea that, you know, children and families, this isn't like, they don't come to us as like, oh, hey, we were just born yesterday. And, you know, like we didn't have a life before we got here, and that we're going to help them with some new coping or some new thing. But that what we really strive to do, and I think this is something you and I always really agreed on, and what I try to teach my students, is that families come already with skills. They come already with strengths, and we need to help them identify what those strengths are, and then how to apply them to this situation. Like you said, what other challenges have they had in their lives that we can pull from and use that little thread to attach to this one and say, how can we use those skills in this setting and in this particular instance? Sometimes those strengths are things that are totally different from what I might see as a strength in a family, but that family has identified it. So it's really important that we amplify or uplift, right? I often think of us as standing behind families, sort of helping them do what they need to do, as opposed to in front of demonstrating or showing them what they need to do, right? Like I want to push forward the family and the child, not myself or child life or whatever. I think that really connects to that our idea for this podcast, that we have a lot of these skills within ourselves. It just is about figuring out what they are and how we can utilize in the ways that we need to support our own development, to support our own coping, to support our family or our loved ones or others in our lives.
Absolutely. And just like you said, that support and that community. I think a lot of times, mm-hmm. When we worked with families, how they felt so alone and like feeling like, you know, that they didn't have that support, and getting that support and then realizing like, okay, I can actually do this. I didn't know I could, but I can by just, you know, being that supportive presence to help them navigate and figure it out. And then by all means, also helping make sure they have the resources available to them as well. And, you know, advocate, but then also, you know, being able to advocate for themselves. I think one of the things that I love so much is that you have a patient and a family who come to you so afraid, so just confused and not really overwhelmed and not really knowing what to do. And then you watch the progression as they learn to figure out their own way of coping, and it changes, it pivots. And then you see that same kid who meets a new kid who's scared, afraid, and anxious. And now they're saying, hey, this is what I did. And maybe that can help you. And I mean, those are the moments that, you know, stand out to me as great child life moments, because watching that child or watching that family being able to do it all by themselves, I don't know, to me is amazing. It's empowering because they're empowered.
Totally agree. Totally right. I often have said that a kid might need you in the beginning to help them remember those tools, identify those tools, identify those skills that they have. But if they're still doing that months into treatment, or they still need somebody, if they're still calling for you, then somewhere you haven't done your job quite right. Like you're teaching somebody the skills that they need to be able to do that on their own or with the support of a family or just them and the nurse. And when that happens, that's the magic to me, right? It's that aha moment that that kid has where they're like, oh, I did it myself, right? Like without everybody else, without me there, without you there, right? Like, or just with them and their mom, or just, or the mom, or they're able to apply those when they get home. And, you know, when you teach kids how to, you know, swallow a pill in the hospital with you there, but can they then replicate that when they get home and do those same things at home? And they are able to me, that's sort of the highlight of the gig. And I didn't do it. That kid did it. That kid figured out, they took what I was teaching them, tweaked it to themselves and what they needed it to be that would work for them. And off they went with it and were really able to develop their own set of skills to be able to do that thing that they thought that they couldn't do. And that was always really inspiring. It's really inspiring to see somebody just sort of feel that good about themselves and that confidence and self-esteem boost that they get from being able to accomplish something that they thought they could do.
Absolutely. I mean, because let's think about times for our own selves, things you thought like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, there's no way I could do this. And then being able to come out on the other end of it and see that success and feel good about yourself. I think right now, you know, we're taking a risk doing this podcast and, you know, and just seeing how it turns out. But again, you know, but also being able to share. I think that one thing is that I want to be able to share my knowledge and experience with others so that they can also take this and develop again their own coping kit. Because, you know, I think about it. We've been doing this for like over 30 years or so plus years. And think about all those families we've worked with. They've all built their coping kits. You know, we've kind of been putting those things in that bag and just taking it along with them on the journey of whatever that next thing is. So I think that's really like what we wanted to do with everyone here. It's like, you know, what other things can I put in that bag and take it with me on that next journey, whatever that journey may be, where you need that support. And that's what I feel like we're going to build a community that has that child life kind of philosophy of that coping kit, but making it even broader is what I'd like to see us do.
Agreed. I think that's really well said. And I really appreciate you also bringing in your other trainings and skill sets. And, you know, we both have like additional things that we've done in our lives outside of child life work, and how those other skill sets that we've brought in have really helped us think about change, expand, and grow ourselves and our own ideas about how we take care of ourselves, how we support others that we are working with, whether that be our staff, or in my case, students, and in your case, staff and patients and families, and what that looks like and how we're sort of bridging that into other environments and how we think about that. One of the things that we also talked about and mentioned was this idea of this work being a calling, and that we both have these sort of background stories to our work, or ways that we've described our work as being a calling. So when I use that phrase, that can bring up a lot of, you know, interesting ideas about the work, right? Because I think a lot of child life specialists describe themselves as this is their life's work, this is their calling. So what does that mean to you when I say that, or what do you think of your work, your experience as coming to this field and with that kind of language?
Yeah, I think calling is a very interesting word. I do believe for me, like I'm a person that my work has to have purpose and meaning. So I think that's what I connect to a calling. Like, I do feel like, you know, as a Christian woman, that I feel like God has a plan for everyone. And that I feel like my part of my plan, my purpose was to do this work, to help patients, to help families, to help children, to help anyone just figure out how to cope and manage whatever they're experiencing. I think that it started out in child life and working in the hospital setting, but I think I also see it now as my work as a life coach. You know, I used to say, you know, only want to work with the adults if they have children. But now I've changed my mind. I used to joke about that now. But really, you know, as a life coach, really just helping people figure out how to answer those big questions. And a lot of it comes around, you know, coping. A lot of it comes around because my coaching is fear-based. So really about your fears and how to help you navigate those fears and help you cope better to achieve whatever you want to achieve. So yeah, so to me, like, my work has to have purpose and meaning. Like, I feel like that's when I say a calling. Like, I feel it has to have that God-given purpose for me to kind of do what I do. And I feel like that what I've learned over the years is that it always falls back to helping others navigate their life situations to, you know, figure out how to cope better with whatever they're dealing with at a time. So I think to me, that's what calling means to me. So for you, how would you define your calling, or what does it mean to you when we say calling?
Very similar in a lot of ways. You know, I grew up in a family where my father was a minister and my mother was a nurse. Both chose professions that they felt they were called to do, that they wanted to do something that was within the helping profession. We were always encouraged to pursue jobs for the love of the job as opposed to the financial gains that we might get from it. So, you know, I have described my work as a calling many times, that I have felt called to do this work. And I think I like, you know, your definition of that I'm called to do work that helps other people, that promotes people, that moves people forward, that it's not about me, it's about them. But the word calling also, or kind of conjures up this idea of divine intervention. And I think that sometimes that can get sticky when you think about the profession of child life itself and ideas of, you know, whiteness, and that this divine intervention, somehow I've been divined intervention to be a child life specialist. And for those who don't know, I am a white woman. Like, now as a in a different place in my life and understanding things differently, that language feels different to me than it did, you know, when I first started out, when I felt like I have this very vivid memory of like one of my first, I don't know, it must have been like the first couple months I was working. Our playroom in our office was on the 10th floor, and the unit that I was covering was on the 8th floor. So I always ran down the stairs. And I remember skipping steps because I was, you know, like 23 years old at the time. So I could do things like jump over multiple steps at a time. And I was flying down the stairs. And I remember literally like thinking in my head as I'm skipping like millions of steps to go faster, that I couldn't believe somebody was paying me to do this work. I just remember being like, I can't believe I'm being paid to do this job. I love what I'm doing so much. So I think there's a distinction there that aligns more with this idea of a calling to want to help others and be in service to people, rather than this idea of I've been called by a divine intervention that puts me ahead of others somehow, right? That leads to something a little different, which I'm sure in this podcast we'll have lots of talks and discussions about bias and race and things like that. But I just, not to throw a monkey wrench into this conversation right now, but I just wanted to make that kind of distinction in that language. And I don't even know if I'm being super clear, but that's okay because we got time.
No, you're being super clear. I mean, what I'm hearing is that, you know, you see things differently than you did when you're early on. And maybe when you use that term divine intervention, you know, you're questioning, like, you know, possibly was I in my whiteness? Was I, you know, what was happening for me? You know, oftentimes I hear a lot of people talk about, especially in child life, the saverism, like I'm going to save these children kind of thing. So again, does that connect to this divine intervention? Like I'm going to somehow save these poor children, you know, who need me. You know, that's the conversations we'll probably definitely, I know, get into to talk about, like, what's that about? Because the reality is our patients and families we work with or clients, they don't need us to save them. That's not our role. So again, I think you bring up something good. We'll definitely talk about that because that's also something of interest of ours. These type of discussions about race and racial consciousness. So more to come if you continue to listen with us.
Because we've been talking about that for a long time.
Yeah. So yeah, it's funny. It's like, I feel like we're back in our office together and we're having these discussions. But yeah, just to really, you know, talk about that divine intervention and what it means. You know, because I do feel like something put us here, because it's funny, like, you know, went to Utica College, came back, because I'm a Bronx girl for life, and, you know, ended up having an internship. And Genevieve, like we said, our lifelong journey together, was my, you know, internship supervisor. And something connected us there. And then we ended up working together for many years in the hospital. And you went, left me. Went on.
I left you in good hands.
Left you in good hands. Well, yeah, left me in good hands. Went on. And, you know, again, how our lives are still connected. And, you know, like I said, we haven't like worked side by side, but I think, you know, we've kind of reconnected and have done a couple of projects together and like this one. So again, like, I feel like, I don't know if you've ever heard this expression, people come into your life for a reason, a season, and a lifetime. And I feel like, you know, for us, it's kind of been like a lifetime. Known each other for it's about to be my 29th anniversary at work. So yeah, so something about that, like I do feel like people are meant to meet people for different reasons, and here we are
is right.
So I'm wondering, Genevieve, because we're talking a little bit about coping kits, and you know, this is what we're going to talk about, you know, what are some of the things that maybe your favorite things or things that you suggest to families and they start to think about how to create their coping kit?
Some of my most favorite coping is, as you know, and I know you are this way as well, neither one of us are big fanny pack carriers. There's always this sort of like idea that child life specialists are walking
around. No, not a big fanny pack.
This magical fanny pack that you just sort of, it's like Mary Poppins bag where you just pull like crap out of it. Like, oh, I've got a coping tool for that. Here's my, you know, my light spinner and my, I never.
And for those who do, that's wonderful.
That's totally what you're saying.
We're just not fanny pack kind of girls. Go ahead.
That is so true. Yes, that is totally fine. I'm much more likely to use what I've got right here with me. I sing. I have sung many songs about blood. Oh, yeah. I have made them up on the spot. I've sung songs about taking deep breaths. I have sung songs, made up lyrics about, you know, cancer and chemotherapy and all kinds of things as ways to really help children cope in those moments or, you know, find a little bit of the funny in something when appropriate, right? And I'm very physical. Like I've danced, I've had kids literally blow me away and I physically will move my body and forward. And those are some of my most favorite moments because kids are so engaged in getting me to do things through their power and through what they're doing, whether that be taking big deep breaths to blow me down the hallway, right? That they're not even realizing or recognizing that they're getting a blood draw or they're having an IV placed or something. But like on a sort of broader space, I think part of the process is really getting to know families and finding out about who they are, what makes their family tick. What do they identify as their own strengths, either amongst each other or in themselves, that then they bring to the table, right? So, you know, maybe they might say, oh, well, my son has a really great sense of humor. All right, well, let's think about how can we use that? Or what are someone's interests? How can we use an interest in, you know, sports or soccer, right? To help them understand their diagnosis or ways that we can connect with, hey, think about the first time that you rode your bicycle. that was really scary too. How can we use what you got through that moment in this one, right? I really like kind of the deep dive into learning about families and learning about their interests and who they are and their culture and their traditions, because I think those are all things that can really help families think about and design their own coping, right?
Yeah, I agree that, you know, really just getting to know the family and figuring out like what works for them. And I think there's something about people naturally like when people ask them about, you know, if you're working with a family, the caregiver, the parent, whoever's caring for the child likes when you ask about their child, what are they like? What are they interested in? And then also too, I think even when you're working with the child, the adolescent, when you start to talk about what their interests are, you know, what interest them or what things that they've been able to do as far as coping, it also helps them to see like, oh, actually, yeah, I actually did do this. Or maybe we could try this, you know, like really helping them. I like the same concept of helping them be involved in the process. And then if you get someone who's like, I'm not sure, you kind of like, oh, but how about I'll give you this idea and then you give me an idea and so on and so forth. But yeah, just really, I feel like I'm definitely old school like you in a sense of, like whatever's in front of me, that's what I'm using. You know, I have to say I'd probably be a little lost using iPads and all these other things because I just don't really use them. But yeah, but again, just the deep breathing. Sometimes, you know, even in the distraction of clearly right now, you don't want to be in this space. Where else would you want to be? You know, where else can we take you? That family trip back to your, you know, being back in your bedroom versus being in a hospital bed, whatever the case may be. I think it's just interesting, like what different tools work for different kids and families.
Yeah. So
it's fun to navigate that.
And I think you learn a lot about the family through that process, mm-hmm. right? And I think you learn a lot about yourself, right? You learn a lot about yourself through that process also, and how you work as a child life specialist. Can I be patient enough to wait for the family to come up with, does it need to be my idea or do I let the family shine, right? When people give me credit for when a kid does really well, do I say, hey, thanks, I know, I'm awesome. Or do you say, listen, that was really all the kid in the family. That's not my doing, you know. I gave them some ideas and they made it their own, right? That's really, I think, some of the most powerful moments of our work.
And that the family allows us to be in that moment with them as they navigate it. Because I think that's a gift too, that they're allowing us to be there to support, but then again, letting them take the lead.
And it's, I guess in a way, I don't know if you can call this coping, but it's monitoring. Yeah, certainly monitoring my own ego, right? So I've got to cope with my own desires to want to be like, yeah, I'm jack shit. I'm super cool, right?
Yeah, super cool.
Right. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Right back at you. But to like, you know, sometimes you have to be able to control your own energy, right? So you got to be able to bring yourself down a notch, or you got to match that energy. You got to like be really watching when a kid is, what's clicking for them, what's not, and being able to change that up. And I think that applies to like really any situation. When I'm talking to my own kids, I find so much harder. Like I find myself when I'm doing sometimes things with my own kids and I'm not doing things that I would normally, like when my kids are getting all worked up or something, I'm like trying to solve their problem as opposed to just being like, what can I do for you right now? Or I can see you're really upset, which is what I would say to a kid in the hospital, right? Or a kid who's in trauma or feeling stress. I would say, you know, I can see that you're really under stress right now. I'd validate those feelings. And then I'd say, what can I do for you? What would help you right now? Right? I might make a few suggestions if they need that. But sometimes with my own kids, I'm like, what am I doing?
You know? Yes, because then you're not the child life specialist, you're a mom. Right. So it's wearing a different hat. And I think, you know, so funny, you know, but also learn to be gentle with yourself, because sometimes in the moment, whatever's going on, you're not thinking in that way, and that's okay. And you bring yourself back.
My favorite description when people say, oh, you must be such a great mom, you do all these things. I'm like, eh, you know what? I'm a really good child life specialist. I'm a mediocre parent at best.
You're too much. Mom, you're a great parent. But yeah, it's true though. It's like, you're right. It's like, once you're in that, it's weird because you're in a different space because you're looking at it from a different pair of glasses. You know, you put the mom glasses on because this is your kid that you got to take care of and all these different things. And the patient is, it is different, a different dynamic. It is so true.
It's so true. It all goes out the window.
And then, and then we do come back and we're like, you know, I know. I wonder what my son would say. He's like, I probably had some crazy moments too. He'd probably say, yeah, you did, Mom, but it's okay. It's all right. You know, that's one thing, you know, not beating ourselves up for what we do and then, you know, learn from it. You know, what can we change as we grow?
Well, I think in this very first podcast, we have covered a lot already, a lot about ourselves, a lot about the work that I hope is helpful to others to hear this. Our goal is to, you know, continue this podcast, continue our conversation with each other about a variety of topics. I think if people have ideas for topics, we'd love to hear them. When we post our podcast, we'll have some links for people for resources that connect to the topic. We'll have our contact information or emails where you can reach out to us. You know, if you're interested in coaching with Rochelle, or if you just have a suggestion for a topic, we got all kinds of ways to hopefully be able to reach us. But we'd also like to leave you with some reflective work, which is an integral part of Child Life. And Rochelle, want to share what we thought we might leave our listeners with?
So absolutely. So yeah, so definitely we want to hear from you. Any thoughts, ideas, whatever you think about the podcast, any suggestions, as Genevieve mentioned. And then I just want to leave you with a question, you know, because we're talking about creating these coping kits. So we're going to start each time with different topics. I'm going to leave you the question of like, you know, what do you think you need in your coping kit? And also, what are some things you already have in your coping kit that you can use right now? I think, you know, right now, definitely, you know, we're all going through a pandemic. So really just starting to talk about and think about like, you know, what are those things in my coping kit that I can use right now? We'll talk more about that. But also I want you to think about, you know, what do I need? You know, as Genevieve and I talked about, it can look like so many different things. So more to come, but that's just, you know, kind of a takeaway, you know, of starting to think about like, what, you know, do I need in my coping kit? And we're going to continue this journey together and really start to talk about different things that you can start to add to your coping kit. So again, we are so excited that you joined us for our first podcast, Coping Kit for Everyday Life. And woohoo is right. And we look forward to you joining us for our next show. So we'll be out there real soon. So please reach out. We want to hear from you. Great. And with that, till next time.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us today for our episode of Coping Kit for Everyday Life. We hope you take away something from this podcast that sparks your imagination, or you discover a new tool for your coping kit. Remember to check out our resources and exercises in today's podcast notes. We would love to hear from you. Please share your comments, questions, or suggestions for future shows. You can find our emails in our podcast notes. Look forward to hearing from you.